right, welcome to the first edition of the True Crime Podcaster. As I mentioned last week on the White Collar Crimes Podcast, we are branching out, getting a new website, lots of cool things going on. We're going to be covering all kinds of crime now. We're still going to cover a lot of white collar crime. In fact, you can check out, if you haven't already, the bonus episode, just a quick update on the Sam Bankman-Fried case that we've been following here for the past year. 25 years in prison, which is a decent one for a white collar crime, but I don't know, we'll discuss a little bit whether or not that was a fair sentence or not, but that's not the case we're going to be covering on this, again, the first episode of our now True Crime Podcaster. YouTube channel's in development still, and it will match this podcast, but we're going to cover all kinds of crime, so we hope you'll continue to join us and be part of that and grow even more and expand even more than what we had in the long time that we covered white collar crimes, and again still will be doing actually. But we're just glad that you are here for this first episode to kick this one off, and we hope it grows into much more. Now technically we are talking about a case on this episode that is not really a crime, I guess you could say, because right now it's more of a missing persons case, pretty much. If I mean, it's altogether what it is, because as of right now, as you'll see when we talk about it in a little bit, there have been no arrests made in this or right now any real hardcore evidence of criminal activity taking place. It's very strange because it doesn't happen that much this age, but people just sort of like vanishing into thin air. And that's the case that we'll talk about in that happened in Minnesota on the case of Brandon Swanson. Some of you might be familiar with this case. We're glad that we can bring you information on this case, brought to you by our sponsor, The Weekend Angler. Check out his YouTube channel, The Weekend Angler. Glad we always have them aboard as our sponsor. Proud to do so. As I say each time, the time I'm recording is getting a little bit closer to fishing weather where I live, or the type of fish I like to catch anyway. Some of the crappie fishermen and bass fishermen and whatnot are already kind of in the early works of that. Of course, we've had very unusual early warm spring and pretty much warm most of the winter where I'm at too. So it's time a little bit earlier for that. I've already mowed grass a couple times, which normally I would not be doing this time of year, or at least not twice already. So just a lot of strange things going on with that. But speaking of strange things, this case has kept, unfortunately, Mr. Swanson's family and law enforcement officials really scratching their heads and trying to figure out what's going on. And we hope someday we'll be doing a follow-up episode on this to find some good news that maybe Brandon has been located and he's safe and doing well. But this case goes back to a town in called Marshall, Minnesota, which is in the southwest corner of the state. And that's actually not far from where I was at. Visited a friend in South Dakota last year. Took a short trip into Minnesota. I'd never been to Minnesota. Kind of just wanted to say I had. So we went in there. And I look at it now, we weren't too far from where this took place at. And this is, from what I recall, pretty rural, desolate kind of area. So somebody disappearing, per se, certainly could happen, especially, you know, if you're familiar with climates and things. Those, you know, Minnesota can have unusually very fierce cold winters, and it'd be very easily for somebody to freeze and die. But that's not at the time of year when this happens, so that's not something that's really been taken into consideration here. But when you see that area, you can see how rural it is, and you see that maybe, it'd be easy probably for somebody to disappear. And I can relate. I live in a fairly rural area myself. But this is a strange case that has kept law enforcement, as I said, really baffled and puzzled for a long time. And in fact, since 2008, when this case happened, Brandon Swanson at that time was attending Minnesota West Community and Technical College, and he was reported to be studying wind turbines. Now, in the early morning hours of May 14th, 2008, he disappeared, and he has not been heard from or seen since this time. So at the time I record this, this is late March of 2024. So we're talking in about a month and a half or so, we're looking at about 16 years since he's been seen or heard from. And As I said before, in today's age of technology we have, that is very highly unusual, because a lot of times, even if they're not found, a lot of times, usually by now, somebody will come forward with some information. I looked at a case, actually, it was on a true crime channel. I saw it was a case of a guy that disappeared in, I believe it was New Mexico, for about 8 years, a guy named Mike Snyder. Well, his wife just claimed he ran off and that was the end of it. And for 8 years, they couldn't prove her wrong. But usually how these cases get solved is just what happened in here. Finally, somebody comes forward with some information. They offer an anonymous tip, or they offer information in exchange for some immunity from prosecution to protect them from being charged with knowing and concealing the crime. But somebody came forward finally, and then they were able to locate his body. His wife had murdered him and had him buried under their garage. So dogs were not able to pick up the scent or anything like that. So for 8 years, he was just considered missing, though nobody really believed he was. People, friends and family believed he was murdered, just nobody could prove it. But finally, her son stepped forward and told the information, I believe it was her son, that what had happened. And they were able to finally arrest her and bring her to justice. But for 8 years, the man went missing and was not able to be found. And that happens a lot of times. And, you know, people tend to think that detective cases or just law enforcement investigations in general are always solved by this Sherlock Holmes brilliant detective work. And a lot of times it is. These cases are. But I will say, a lot of times, if not the majority of the time, these cases these detectives solve are brought to you just by what I talked to you about a second ago, where somebody will come forward and give information, even anonymously or wherever or however. But these people come forward with information and it finally helps them solve these cases. Most of these cases are cold, they're stagnant, they don't know where to go till they finally get a tip. But an enormous amount of these are. We have a pretty much an impression through TV and movies and whatnot that all these cases are just solved again by this Sherlock Holmes CSI Miami forensic type investigation. And yeah, that happens, but it's not the norm, it's not the majority. And I would dare say the majority of these cases do get solved because of just tips, guilty conscience or whatnot, but people come forward and offer this information, and then police finally get the leads they need and they're able to do a good solid investigation, gather evidence, and then finally make the arrest. But 16 years now, we're talking twice as long as that Snyder case I was talking about from New Mexico just a little bit ago. Now, on that night, on the early hours of May 14, 2016, as I said, he's disappeared and not been heard from since. Now, nothing highly unusual surrounded the case, really, that night that was going on, that at least preceded this time that he disappeared. He was out celebrating the end of semester with his classmates, which is definitely not unusual for college students. I can remember my college days, and I certainly was always glad and felt like celebrating any time a semester came to an end. Whether I was in junior college or grad school, I was glad when it came to an end. It's just nice to have a break. So that's not unusual there. He's not involved in any unusual or criminal activity. He's just out celebrating the end of the semester with friends, which is normal college behavior for a 19-year-old. It's also doubtful to me that at this age he had very many serious enemies. And there's certainly nothing or any evidence to that, to contradict that. He was not known to have any enemies or anybody that would make him want to disappear. So that further puzzles and complicates this case. Now, he called his parents around 2 a.m. and told them that he had driven his car off in a ditch. And he asked for their help. He did state that he was not hurt. So again, nothing out of the unusual. Probably driving too fast, maybe. It's possible. I don't know if he said anything about drinking or not, if he had been under the influence. There's nothing reported that he has. So at this point, just looks like maybe it's late, tired, driving maybe a little fast, wanting to get home. But anyway, he gets into a wreck and his car's off out into a ditch, calls his parents and asks for help, which is good he's able to do that in this day and age. Even in 2008, we all had cell phones. We didn't have smartphones yet, most of us. I think they might have just been in the early stages in development around that time. I certainly didn't have one in 2008, but I had a cell phone where I could call for help. Now, in my college days back in the 90s, it was a little more difficult. A lot of people didn't have cell phones back then, and if you crashed in a ditch, you would have to walk into town or somewhere to find a phone. And we'll get to that in a little bit in this case too, because that is at least one of the circumstances in that, as you'll see. But it had been a little more difficult in the time I can remember going to college, but even now and in 2008, cell phone technology exists, so he was able to at least call them and ask for help. So his parents have established a contact with him at about 2 a.m. that morning. So as I said, back in my college days, I probably would have had to walk the town. Well, he sees the light of a town a little ways off, and his parents, you know, they drove around, they weren't able to find him. So he tells them that he's just going to walk into this town toward the light of this town, which he believed it to be a small town by the name of Lynd, I believe is the correct way to pronounce this, L-Y-N-D. It's a small town there in that southwest Minnesota area of only about 400 people. So really small town, which again, this is a pretty rural area. So I'd say a lot of towns around there probably are very smallly populated like that. But he sees enough light to know he's near this town that he believes, and he tells them since they can't find him where he's located. And again, this is probably before GPS technology existed on our phones, and back then a lot of people probably didn't have any type of GPS technology, the Garvin or anything like that, in their cars. So they may have had a little bit of trouble locating him. He may not have known his exact location, but long story short, they weren't able to locate him, so he tells them on the phone, fine, I'm going to walk toward Lynd here, I can see the light, and that's what I'm going to head up for, and you can maybe possibly pick me up there. Now, his parents remained on the phone with him the whole time, and they claim at this time it was all of a sudden when he exclaimed the words, oh shit, and he went silent. And for the rest of the call that they were on the line, they heard no more out of him. Now, his parents kept trying to call him back multiple times, but reportedly at this time, the calls began to go straight to voicemail, which, especially on those types of phones, that's usually a sign that the phone's been shut off or not in working order. So I'm sure at this time they become very frantic. They're not able to reach him. The phone goes straight to voicemail. They don't reach him. And as I said earlier, this is May 14, 2008. And since that time, he's not been seen or heard from since. When I heard about this case and read about it, and I remember hearing about it a while back, but looking at it to put together and get the information out for this podcast is very much, this is almost something like out of a horror movie. I grew up in the 80s and horror movies were really big back then, and this is kind of like a script out of something that you would see in those. But folks, this is real life, and this is just a very strange case. We don't know what he saw that made him exclaim that, but that's the last words they heard him say, and then he was no longer on the line, and they've never been able to find him since. And that is what makes it strange, in a sense that you would almost think this was just a script out of a Hollywood horror movie. But as I said, sadly it's not, folks. This is reality, and his family has had to deal with the stress of this for the last almost 16 years now, wondering what happened to him that night and where he is ever since then. So there's nothing logical about this disappearance. Now, they quickly reported him missing to the police around 6:30 a.m. that morning, which is very prompt and very fast. And as you'll see, and I'm sure those of you that are Gen X my age that grew up then, police did not take a very quick stance on finding somebody reported missing, especially if they'd only been missing, in this case, four and a half hours. I remember growing up, and until probably just recently, in most jurisdictions, people had to be missing 24, 48 hours, something like that, before they could be officially considered missing, and police were going to go out and search for them or declare them a missing person. Now, as you'll see through the efforts of the family, this would change Minnesota law, because at this time, in this case, when this happened, police did not automatically go out and just begin searching for someone that was claimed to be missing. As you'll see, they had their doubts. If you look into this case a little bit, they thought, you know, he's young, it's a college student, he's probably out living it up or partying, it's nothing unusual, don't worry, I'm sure he'll turn up. Probably all those things went through their minds, and that, in most cases, probably would be reality. But the lesson learned from this case is, you'll see that it's a good idea to take any report of a missing person seriously and to get looking at it as soon as possible, because this certainly can't be any kind of logical explanation they can bring. So it's very clear, after him disappearing on the phone like that and 4.5 hours later nowhere to be found, it's a good idea to claim and report that he's been missing. And they do just that, but the police were a little hesitant at that time to really put too much diligence in it after only 4.5 hours. In fact, The mother said that one officer even stated to her that it was, quote, his right even to be missing. Now, obviously, eventually they did conduct some searches, and obviously they were not able to turn up any results. But they did come across his car, and they did recover that. But even stranger, that adds to the more bizarre nature of this case, is the car yielded no evidence that was suspicious. It showed no signs of any type of foul play or being involved in any type of crime or disappearance or anything. So they have found the location of where he was at the time he was on the phone with them, but he's nowhere in sight, and quite frankly, there's nothing in that area crime scene wise that shows anything's out of order, any type of foul play happened. So this again adds even another level of strangeness to a case that is filled with it. Now, cell phone records were able to pinpoint his general area that night, but even a team of bloodhounds brought in from neighboring South Dakota were not able to locate Brandon Swanson. And again, just adds just to a case that's already making you scratch your head, because bloodhounds should have been able to trace down and find some type of evidence or something, but they weren't really ever able to do that. And it's just always strange. I find it odd that Jimmy Hoffa has been missing now for almost 50 years and they've never been able to locate his body. It's just not easy to do like it was at one time. And in here now, we're talking even 16 years ago, technology was enough to where it should be easier to find somebody, where somebody couldn't literally just vanish or disappear into thin air. You don't hear about it happening as much now as you did in years past. So that's what makes this case even a little bit more bizarre. And again, until we know where he's at, we may never know what he saw that made him exclaim those two words on the phone with his parents, but something definitely startled him to make him exclaim that. And again, that's the last words that he's been known to utter at this time. But the Swansons continued to leave their porch light on in hope that he would return. And as I said, he was 19 at the time, so Brandon would be about 35 years old now. And family and friends no doubt are hoping and still clinging to hope that he will be found alive and safe and well. And we certainly hope so too. I cannot even fathom the anguish and torture that family and friends have had to go through when somebody just disappears like out of thin air. So many times family members of crime victims don't always get closure, and that's one of the torturous things they go through. Sometimes you hear cases where somebody for a long time got away with a murder and then finally it was solved, and you hear the families talk about that, you know, they're still dealing with the heartbreak of losing that loved one, but they are able to at least get some kind of closure and get some peace and some healing. And sadly for the Swanson family, they have not gotten any closure in 16 years nearly since this incident happened. Now, as I said just a little bit ago, this did change the way police procedures were done in Minnesota and even some other states. Now, his parents fought hard to change the law that police should begin investigating immediately when somebody is reported missing. And I'm sure in years past, they didn't always immediately begin searching for somebody, because a lot of times you might just get a worried parent because kid was a little late coming home from basketball practice or something like that, and they don't want to have all their time just constantly looking out after maybe worried moms or parents or scenarios like that. But as this case showed lawmakers and law enforcement, that sometimes you got to really jump on things really fast. And even 4.5 hours after he went missing, there's no telling what actually went down and happened during that time. And as of right now, we won't know until he's someday found, hopefully, and we get that information. But that it was a period of time that once it was reported at 6:30 a.m., had they gotten a sooner start on it, who knows? I mean, we can always play that guessing game, and who knows? It's really easy to do that. But you do have to kind of wonder if maybe they would have gotten started sooner, if there could have been something that could have been discovered that maybe could have changed this case and turned it around. So in 2009, the Minnesota House and Senate unanimously passed Brandon's Law, and it was signed into law by then-Governor Tim Pawlenty. The family was in attendance at this moment. As I said, the bill requires police to notify nearby, or as I said, get started on it sooner, but it also requires police to notify nearby departments of the missing person. So they must also assess the danger that the missing person must be in. And I think it's very quick, and I'm not sure how police could have taken a lax attitude at it at this point. I'm not playing armchair quarterback. That's easy to do. But I do have to wonder if the last thing his parents heard him say was, oh, shit, and now he's gone, then I would be a little suspicious of that as a law enforcement official, and I would probably want to start investigating right away. Now, if they just didn't know where he's at or something, it might be easier to think, okay, he was just out partying, maybe sleeping one off. He'll be home in the morning. But the fact that he saw something that made him exclaim that and then vanished literally into thin air, that probably should have warranted a discussion, I mean, an investigation a little bit sooner than it did. So, but one thing about it, kudos to the family for hanging in there and fighting and getting this law passed where things could be changed and there can be justice for other families maybe when investigations are able to start sooner than they normally would. And it also, this law changed where police could no longer refuse a report because they suspected no criminal activity or foul play was involved. And some other states have passed similar legislation. The FBI has actually included Brandon on their most wanted list. And keep in mind, that's not always necessarily for fugitives and criminals. Probably 99% of the time it is, but the FBI just literally wants him because everybody wants to know where he is and where he's safe and can be brought to justice. So even the FBI, the federal government, has gotten involved in trying to find Brandon Swanson, and they have included him on their most wanted list. I will say to you listeners out there, if you have information on Brandon's location, please call your local police department or the U.S. Department of Justice hotline for missing folks and missing persons at 1-800-843-5678. Again, if you have information on this case, call your local police or call the U.S. Department of Justice at 1-800-843-5678. Somebody out there has to know something, most likely. It's not been that long. It's not like we're covering a case where everybody involved now could possibly be dead. He was very young. Most likely anybody that was around, if there was anybody, they could very possibly definitely still be around. So it's very likely somebody out there knows something. And if you do, I hope you can come forward with that information and help this case and this family get some closure and bring a lot of relief to a lot of people who've been worried about him for the last 16 years. So very troubling case, and we hope that can someday be met with justice. And going to cover another troubling case next week. It's a murder case, actually, that took place in my neighboring state of Missouri. It's going to warn you, it's a little bit disturbing at some levels and some very uneasy material to have to deal with. So just a heads up a little bit on that. And you know, just like I always did on White Collar Crimes, if you have an idea for a podcast episode, please email me at ryanhornvt@gmail.com. Or like I said, if you want to be a guest on this podcast, or if you know somebody or if you have a podcast, I'd love to be on yours. Email me and contact me on that email address as well. Please follow our Facebook page. Make sure to follow the updates. Like I said, we've got a YouTube channel coming, some books, website, all kinds of good things coming with the True Crime Podcaster. And going to have a wide range of topics now, but we're glad to have your input on any of them. And we're glad you tuned in. As I always say, please adopt your best friend at your next best friend at your local pet shelter. Also, please check out some of the audiobooks I've narrated. Check out In Danger of Judgment on Amazon or Audible, or The Gray Fox of Hollywood, the Howard Hawks story, also on Amazon and Audible. And you can also get that at cherryhillspublishing.com. Glad to have you aboard for all these projects and hopefully many, many more. We're excited about the new changes we're making here and we're growing. Please follow us on Apple, Spotify, Google, wherever you're hearing this podcast. Give us a good 5-star rating to help keep going. Well, we thank you so much for tuning in, folks. We will see you here again next week. God bless and take care.